You know, it's so easy when you get a sponsor for the show and you use their services. And I do. It's Karen Locker's Solutions for E-Commerce. Solutionsforecommerce.com/momentum will get you 10% off right now. I've been using her for, I guess it's been a year and change since I first interviewed her. Hired her pretty much right after the show because I'm like, I need everything you're talking about. I've got problems with stranded inventory. And guess what? I had lots of problems with stranded inventory last year as the restrictions were coming through. Boom, she'd fix it. If there's an issue with the photo, fixed. All that kind of stuff. I get refunds now. They just show up. Hey, you know, we're replying to your cases. Here's your refund. My feedback. I don't have to fix my own feedback anymore. It's automatically done. And I see the notes coming through. I still once in a while get an email from Amazon saying, hey, you have some stranded inventory. I send it to her. And most of the time, it's already been dealt with and fixed. But let me tell you, being a single operator, my wife and I, this just takes so much off our plates. I can't say enough about it. It's Solutions for E-Commerce, the number four, solutionsforecommerce.com/momentum to get 10% off her services. Be sure you tell her I sent you. Solutionsforecommerce.com.
Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 191, Robert Benares. I love this talk with Robert. We've met a couple times, and he is such a real, genuine person. And to hear his story, to hear well, he's a smart dude. Hey, you're going to pick that up right away. And he's not married to this business as much as he's married to his life right now. And I think that's powerful. I think more of us need to recognize that. That guess what? This business will change, and it will change outside of your control. And so, by having perspective on that, and not making it all or nothing, I think is a very healthy thing, and I think we talk about that. Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. I'm very excited about tonight's guest. We met, I think it's been 2 years now, personally met, had dinner together, and I was very impressed then, but just watching his activity over the last year and change, I've seen an incredible growth and focus, and I'm all about focus. Robert Benares. Welcome, Robert.
Hi, good to be here. I never thought I'd be one of the people you'd interview, but this is a pleasant surprise.
You always send me these notes like, but you know, I'm all about story. And I mean, you've heard a lot of the stories that, you know, that people have told me.
That's why I love listening to your podcast. It's not like I'm looking for tips. I love listening to the story in the background while I'm working or something and just learning about people.
I hope people do that. Please stay working. Don't listen to me. I had one person tell me one day they listened to 8 hours of me as on their way to wherever. I'm like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I couldn't listen to myself for 8 hours. You know, I'm sorry. But it's not me. It's all about you. And I'm all about the story. You're having an incredible year. You had an incredible year last year. And you're only 3.5 years into this, as you said, a couple of years before you were putzing around. So let's go back. Let's go back, though.
About a year and a half serious.
How do you get to selling? I mean, where you know, you went to school for finance.
No, I actually went to school for economics and computer science.
Now you can stick your pinky out with that one. Whoa.
Not really, because I took the extended 7-year tour.
Ah, yeah, me too. I did.
The first year went through a lot of pot and alcohol and partying.
You got the most out of college. You got a lot out of college, relationship wise, right?
But in my defense, when I came back, I was a model student. Well, I was a model student in terms of grades, because school became easy after working for a year and a half.
Oh, that's interesting. So what were you going to go to school for when you at a high school?
I originally had no idea what I was going to go to school for. Honestly, I picked the school. I was a kid in high school, coasted by on his natural talent, and I just kind of got decent grades. I finished in the middle of my class, and I didn't start applying to class schools. Definitely, of course, I could have done better, but it didn't matter. I enjoyed high school. In the end, I picked my school based on the pretty brochures. I mean, applying to college back when I did, I guess it was very similar to the way when you applied to college. I'm assuming you went to college.
I did.
Yes. You know, they sent you brochures around your junior and senior, early senior year, and you got a ton of them in the mail. Somehow they got your name, and you got from every college that thought they might want a student like you. And I picked a small school in New Jersey because they had a nice looking brochure.
So it wasn't, and I mean, when you were going, it wasn't because you were going after something.
I didn't really have a plan. I mean, I commend anyone who goes to college and has a plan already. I was among probably the 99% that go to college and don't.
You know, how about this thought? Because I have a son in college, and he was just home this weekend, and we had some teachable moments, I call them. And he had a reset this weekend, which we could talk about. But I said, I don't want him to choose for the rest of his life. Because what I see generationally, and I hire accountants, and so when they come, they're there for a couple of years, and they're padding a resume, and they're moving on. And you know that. And that's okay with me once I know that. In the old days, and I'm old enough to, we used to hire people, and they would work for us forever, right? And that was the goal. You work for a company forever, and you retire from there. In our case, they would move us around. They moved me around. That's what it's nature of our business. And, you know, property to property and, you know, bigger and bigger and bigger and more responsibility. Today, I'm not so sure that's a good thing. You know, I think more about family and, you know, I hope my kids don't move across the country. I want them to enjoy life and experience life, but I'm not so sure. Do you think, you know, knowing what you know today, what would you have done different?
I'm not the biggest fan of college, but honestly, I probably would have finished on time.
Did you learn something, though?
I learned. I had a nice base of knowledge going into, and I had a nice base of sort of, how do I put this, critical thinking to figure out things. Like a good example, I was in college the year I came back after being on mandatory leave for a couple semesters. I tried to take calculus 2, was it? Ooh. I already taken calculus 1. I did okay. I got a B my freshman year, which was probably the only B I got, actually. I think everything else was way below that. And I always thought I was pretty decent at math, throw up the Asian card, I suppose. But I did terrible the first exam, and I didn't hand in any of the homework assignments. I was kind of floating a little bit there. And the professor, very nice woman, I forgot her name, but she was very bright. She had won like crazy awards, and she probably didn't win a Fields Medal or anything, but she was very bright. And she called me in her office for office hours, and we talked about my exam, and she said to me very like compassionately, "I really don't think this class is for you." And she said, "You should really think about dropping it. It just doesn't seem like you're geared towards math or something like that." And in my, verbally, she was very compassionate and nice. In my head, and I don't know how many four-letter words I can use on your show, but all I heard was, you're an idiot. Like, you probably can't figure this out. And, you know, whatever four-letter words you can think of. And I was just like, screw this. I'm gonna prove you wrong without, on my own.
What were your parents saying?
Oh, they were just glad I was back in school. I was out of school for a year and a half, kind of floating around working.
Are they educated?
Yeah, my mom finished college actually 2 years ago.
Oh, okay. So it was important to them, though, and so
it was definitely important to them. You know, my mom was she's second or third generation American, Polish and German, I think, descent. But, she grew up very poor in Jersey City, and my dad was a first-generation immigrant from the Philippines. So, for him, education and college were sort of your tickets out of having to fish every day for your food.
And let me ask you a question about that. In the Philippines, is that true?
Not anymore.
No.
There's a lot more opportunity.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say, because some of the VAs that I've hired over the years are college educated, and they did not have a career.
Yes, a lot. There's plenty of opportunity there, I think, now. It's just there's just still so many people that you really have to sort of – it's such a densely populated country. But, education is still sort of your ticket to, the strata, the middle class strata there.
Well, what would you do degree wise? What would you go for the same degree?
No, I would probably go back and take the most difficult degree I could think of, maybe something like electrical engineering. And I tell people, anyone who's going back to school, I tell them, think of the classes you dislike terribly and were the most difficult. And I'm talking about, you know, adult students going back to school. That is what you should major in and go and finish, because if you finish that, you know, everything else, let's say you're like, you know, a social worker, or you're, you know, whatever your chosen career is, you know, you're a data analyst or whatever, you finish that degree, you know, everything else is should be simple. I mean, everything else should be sort of something you can tackle without much problem. That's the approach I kind of take with, and that's probably the approach I'll take with my son going to college. He can take whatever he wants, but I'd prefer if he took something that he found profoundly difficult and overcame it.
I'm very excited. My son's switched his degree, and which has cost me some additional money and a year. He's going to be in for another year. And it's he switched from computer science to digital media. And what's so exciting for me is that his, you know, next semester is video 101. He's doing product photography, and at some point
you're gonna have to explain the difference between those two, because when I was in college, the only computer degree they had was computer science.
Yeah, they did. And you know what was generic about that degree? It's a generic degree, and you could specialize, right? So he was going to specialize in networking. And I don't know how any corporate job you have. Our corporate network is gone. It's now it's cloud based. And so, you know, what the network engineers end up doing is plugging, you know, into the wall, into the jack, and then, you know, handling little simple IT functions. And so that degree, now it's not everywhere, and I don't want to downplay it, because there are people that are doing amazing things, but in our world, it's not. And so, you know, when he was looking out into his future, he wasn't enjoying it. And then he found digital media, and he just loves it. And so what's cool for me is he's learning, like I said, next semester is digital photography. He's taking, I think, the semester after drone photography. Yeah, it's very, very, very current. Podcasting. I mean, they're doing podcasting. I'm like, dude, this is awesome. Tell your teacher I'm coming in. I'm going to come in and talk to him.
It's awesome, but I'm not sure you like paying $300 a class for something.
$300? Dude.
Whatever. I mean, $300.
I was in college. Yeah, you better add a zero to that. add a zero to that. And this is a pretty inexpensive
individual class, not individual sort of semester class. I did the math. When I was in school, I kind of did the math one day in terms of when a professor canceled a class, that class cost like $308 or whatever, depending on if it was a 2 or 3 day class. And I would say to the professor, since you canceled that class, do we get a partial refund on our tuition? And they always kind of gave me a dirty look when I said that kind of thing.
Yeah, that doesn't happen.
We pay a premium for these classes, and if they cancel a class, that's a lot of money.
You know, it's
across 20 students.
I agree. And you know, for me now, you know, the degree he's going for is real for the real world, right? I mean, I could see it in the current world that we're in. He will be able to go out and get a job, right? I mean, there's no question in my mind.
His own business.
Well, and that's what I tell him. I'd like him to work for someone else before he comes and works in our business. He helps in our business. He's doing product photography for a private label product right now, as a matter of fact. But I still want him to learn. This is my opinion, you know, and not that they're spoiled, my kids, but, you know, they don't understand what it's like to grow up poor, right? Do you remember being poor?
I mean, I always thought I grew up poor, but then after college, I kind of spent about 6 months in the Philippines, and then I learned what real poor was.
Okay, so it's relative. So we grew up poor relative to not quite that poor, but I mean, we didn't have anything, and so, you know, I had to pay everything for college myself, and so he, you know, grows up in this big house. He has a car. You know, we didn't have any of those things. You know, and so it's that frame of reference. He doesn't have that frame of reference, and so I want him to go get that. So I'm insisting he goes work for a company and understand what it's like to work for a boss who says, you will be here. And what do you mean you're going to try and take a day off? Oh, no, we need you. You know, that kind of thing. We're right now, we're pretty lenient, you know? I mean, because, you know, when we go on vacation, he gets to go on vacation.
I'm
so
pretty lenient as a boss, too. I mean, I give my employees all kinds of perks. They stay after 8. I Uber them home. I pay for lunch and dinner if they stay late. You know, whatever small things keep them happy.
Is that because you used to work for places that wasn't done, where you were in corporate America? So did that occur when you were in corporate America?
That kind of behavior, no, did not occur.
Never.
I had a few managers who were top notch that tried to do similar behavior. But I worked for, you know, an old school kind of white shoe firm that was, you know, for lack of a better term, oligopoly. So they printed money, essentially, and they did not need to change. You know, this sort of the future and data and the computer age caught up with them, and then they need to change. But even still, they still, you know, you still got your bonus in March. You still struggled through as an associate for like 3 to 5 years. You know, you still required to have a business degree before you, you know, got promoted to VP or something. You know, you needed that CFA to really be respected, that kind of thing. Talent didn't really matter so much unless you were like number one or number two in the group.
So if you were number one or number two in the group, they would look past those things, correct?
No, number one, number two usually had those credentials anyway.
Oh, okay. I just wonder in today's day and age, if somebody came in and they were selling, you know, gazillion dollars worth of stuff, would they look past those things? And if so, they really weren't that important, were they?
Yeah. I mean, that's the way it is in our world, selling on Amazon and,
yeah,
and building a business. That's the way it is. That's the way it is in most of business these days. That's the way it is, except some of the large old corporate firms. But, you know, they're going away gradually. I mean, Sears getting destroyed by Lambert, you know, all these retail stores that are trying to, that aren't adapting their model. And Best Buy is a prime example of one that is adapting their model, but there are plenty that aren't and are just blaming Amazon rather than adapting.
Well, right. They have the same opportunity that, as a matter of fact, they have an infrastructure that they could tap into where Amazon didn't have that infrastructure. Now, it's not necessarily easy, right, to do, but they had that opportunity. And for whatever reason, they chose not to do it, right?
Yeah.
Looking back, do you regret leaving corporate America?
Oh, I didn't. I don't regret it because I didn't leave voluntarily. I was forcibly removed. I had a new manager come on board, and he spent about a year and a half building a case to let me go. I saw it. It was like a slow-moving train. I kind of didn't really accept it was happening, but after I left, it happened to two other people in the same group. And now that manager has been promoted out of the way, so to speak, and he doesn't have a team.
Moving a problem. We always learn.
Yes,
you never move a problem. That's a bad thing.
Yeah, and he was hired by the senior managing director. So he was just a manager, and then there was a managing director, and then he was hired by the senior managing director. So no one could sort of speak out and say, this guy's absolutely terrible. So what they did was they promoted him out of the way, and now he kind of works, you know, on whatever on the side.
How about the people you work with? Are they still there?
Some of them are still there. All of them kind of moved to other teams.
Okay.
I still keep in touch with them. I mean, we had a great team going. I mean, we had a great camaraderie. You know, when we got projects done, it was actually a lot of fun. I actually thoroughly enjoyed my job to a certain degree in what I did. It was so narrowly focused that, you know, I was able to sort of really sort of understand what I was doing and really dig down into sort of the details. You know, with the Amazon business, I can't always do that. I have to stay on the surface many times. But, you know, it's different perks.
So tell us how you get converted from that job. So you lost your job, right, for whatever reason. It is what it is. And so how did you get started selling?
I started selling with a colleague at my old firm. We did it because initially we were in the whole miles and points community. And it enabled me to sort of travel cheaply and like a king for a couple years when there were still a lot of loopholes, like buying money from the U.S. Mint with credit cards, things like that. You can't do any of that stuff anymore. You can't buy prepaid cards with a credit card and convert it to money orders and build up points and stuff like that anymore. But we started doing that. And then my friend suggested we try, you know, selling some electronics on Amazon with, you know, to help, you know, offset generating, you know, miles and points for our little travel hobby. It was kind of a way to hang out without like going to happy hour like you usually did. So we started out looking over at Staples and we flipped laptops and some digital cameras when they used to sell them. And then after about a few months of doing it, we realized we were actually making some decent money. So we kind of dropped the whole idea of miles and points and we started just doing that. We got decent at it. I mean, you know, we were grossing between the two of us. We started a business. We were grossing like $10,000, $20,000 a month before I ended up leaving, and we thought that was big money or whatever. Little did we know how well people were doing with, like, you know, back in 2011 and 12 with like Trader Joe's or something.
So you were on pretty early. Were you FBA back then?
Yeah, we started initially FBA, and I was completely lost. Luckily, we survived. I was completely lost. Yeah, he sent in all the shipments. I didn't really understand the process back then. We would send in maybe one box a week or two boxes a week. You know, back then they didn't enforce any rules. We were sending in like 70, 80 pound boxes, and they didn't give us any trouble about it. We just put team lift on the side and they were fine with it. Mm-hmm. We'd never do that now. But, you know, it was the Wild West back then a little bit, and didn't realize it was the Wild West. We just saw small little opportunities.
You didn't bag anything, right? Nothing got bagged.
We didn't have any. I mean, we did electronics, so really it wasn't really a necessity. And I don't think they had, like, the prep guidelines enforced back then.
Right.
We did a lot of that, and then I stumbled upon, I think about a few months before I got let go, we stumbled upon, not a few months, Q4 2013, we stumbled upon reselling ink at Staples. And it was, I'm sure you're aware, it was a gold mine back then. I mean, Staples had a terrible marketing team. So you had the online marketing team and you had the store marketing team, and one would run a 30% off sale and the online marketing team would run a 25% back in reward sale. And then you basically pay like 30% of retail for the ink and make a killing for a long time. I know a number of sellers, some of whom you've interviewed, that had used that loophole to make a killing back in those days.
Yep.
That doesn't exist anymore, of course. And, you know, Staples has trimmed the fat quite a bit. But
I think most retailers have figured that out, right? I mean, as you go, right? Because you're mostly an RA guy. So you do have to continue to adjust, as you said, when you were talking about those retailers, whether they're adjusting. It's Sears and Kmart apparently haven't adjusted fast enough, right? Fair.
I beg to differ with Sears and Kmart. Sears and Kmart, it's not about they didn't adjust. It's that their corporate, their leadership, mainly their CEO, has decided they're not going to adjust. He has restructured the company such that he will – I've read a lot about this, by the way. That's why I'm mentioning it. He's restructured the company such that he stands to make a fortune when the company fails. And none of the lawsuits from shareholders have been able to dismount him. It's amazing. Like, you have a Wall Street guy who's literally set up an American icon to fail, and he's getting away with it. And none of the other shareholders can really take him down. It's a great read. It's going to be a movie, I bet, one day.
So when they sell off a brand like Craftsman to Stanley, who benefits?
Lambert, the CEO. You know, he lent the company billions of dollars, and he's selling off the pieces to cover his losses on those billions. Plus, he's got a lot of, like, I forget what they're called, reverse leases or something on the land that Sears owned. And Sears' property is huge across the country. And he stands to sort of make a killing on that land when the company goes under.
Fascinating.
If you read about more, it is a very fascinating story.
Well, I remember JCPenney, they switched management and changed courses.
They're trying to survive. Yeah, right. They're a good company.
Well, I think the point is that you have to adjust, correct?
Yes.
You must.
And that's what we've all been doing over the years, switching from one thing to another. I remember 2015, HP Inc. got restricted across the board, and I was like 80% like Staples HP, and I didn't know what – I sort of panicked a little because I was – you know, I was about a year into doing this, a little less than maybe 9 months into doing this full time, and I was like, I don't know what to do. Luckily, we rolled into Q4. And I switched to toys, and that got me through Q4, and that got me through the year, and I started learning a lot more.
Well, let's do this.
It all kind of came together when I got let go. It's like I ended up getting married like right after I got let go, and we had a kid. And you decided to go do
this full time, though. So that's interesting. Well, why didn't you get another job?
I did look around. I didn't present real well, though, in terms of interviewing. And at the time, I didn't know that well because I had spent years concentrating on doing the work and not sort of playing the social game. I was very involved in like the data work I did. I created this data analysis platform that I was, you know, for lack of a better term, my firstborn. and everyone used it and everyone loved it. And I knew it down to like the nuances. And, you know, and I could talk your ear off about it forever, all the data projects I worked on. And I was passionate about my work. And when you're interviewing, it's an interview. It's getting people to like you. Most everyone they interview is qualified enough where they could teach them to do the job. I just did not present well. And, you know, I didn't know how to sort of attract people, I suppose. Is that, if that's the right term?
No, I get it.
I had a few interviews. Some couple things fell through the cracks that I should have gotten probably. But in the end, I kind of didn't put as much. I didn't put enough effort into really find a new corporate job.
Do you think that was intentional?
Yeah, I think psychologically it was intentional because I was doing well and I liked what I was doing. I was still a little nervous that I was making ends meet, and I was making a little bit more than making ends meet. But now, you know, I saw sort of the future with it, and I saw that I could just keep expanding. And once I started networking, and like one day I decided to look on YouTube and start learning more, I started networking with everyone in every group. Like, I was solo for until like probably the fall where HP Inc. got restricted.
What? How does your in-laws, right? Because you got married during this time. What did they say? They're like, hey, he can't find a job. I mean, I think about how a dad would be about his daughter, right? His princess. She's marrying a guy, and it's like, hey, wait a second. You know, what's he doing?
It's the way it all came about was a little.
Well, you don't have to get too personal, but I mean,
I don't want to get too much into it. But the bills are always paid, and okay. You know, we never really. And to this day, we still don't really want for too much. We don't really worry about not being able to afford things at the moment. I can't afford a private jet yet, but, you know, I'm working on it.
Okay.
So long as I think financially we're okay. Okay. And we're getting better. And it's weird. I say I won't feel comfortable until I'm doing like $2-3 million, which is kind of funny.
Well, it's interesting to me. You know, when we were talking in the pre-call about, you know, responsibility and pressure. And so what I want to do is end this segment, and I want to take a break, and I want to come back and start talking about responsibility and then how you manage it, because your comment has struck me. You know, so here I am, and I think I announced it today out there, and so this interview will come out after, but I'm retiring this Friday. And so I'm looking at it and I'm thinking to myself, I just don't want the responsibility anymore. And it's a great job. I make over six figures. It's been a great life, but I just don't want the responsibility. And so you mentioned, and don't want you to answer it, but you have a lot of responsibility, but yet you have no stress with it. Man, I'm dying with that. I want to hear how you handle that. So let's take a break. We'll be right back. You've heard me talk a lot about private label, and Andy Slammons is back with a new free course. It's the Smart Private Label course. S stands for selecting a product. M, manufacture with the right supplier. So important. Amazing photos, keyword research, and listing preparation is the A. R stands for ranking your product to the first page of search. We all know how critical that is. And then T is taking your product to the top of Amazon and beyond. This is a free course. It's going to help you get that foundation to do your own private label productness. You want to work smarter. Get it smarter. AmazingFreedom.com/smart. AmazingFreedom.com/smart. Tell Andy I sent you. You know, in this whole segment, we're going to talk about intentional living and Robert's lack of stress. I love the fact that he has perspective around the processes he has put in place to reduce stress. Simple things. Scheduling bills. Doesn't sound complicated. Sounds pretty common sense. Guess what? How many of us do it? Having a reminder set to pay certain bills, it eliminates stresses, because otherwise you might go to bed thinking about that and you never get it off your mind. You never get in that real sleep. I love his change, and he's looking at wholesale processes. Again, that's thinking further out and you know, just again, paying attention to what changes are going and things that he can't control because he doesn't want the stress. I think that intentionality, I guess is the right way to say it, trying to say intentional, living like that is just so important. Let's get back into the podcast. We're back and we're talking with Robert Benares, and just a great guy, great seller, killing it, had an incredible year in 2016, but is scheduled and plans and is on track to double it. And man, that is no small feat. I applaud you. I applaud the effort. Clearly you have the skills and you've really taken you've been very serious about it. You're mostly an RA, some wholesale. I don't know if you do any OA at all. Any?
I do a ton. OA happens after midnight.
Okay. All right. So you don't sleep either. You're like a goose. You never sleep. You're just a machine. So let's talk about responsibility. So, you know, again, I don't want to beat my horses in about me, but it's just that I'm walking away from responsibility because I just don't want any point in my life. You know, our kids are gone or just about gone, you know, big empty house, just the two of us. So we're downsizing all those things to be more intentional about our life, right? We want to kind of walk away from that responsibility because it gets to you. You made the comment that you have a lot of responsibility and you have six people, so that's a lot. And yet you don't feel stress. Why is that?
I kind of, you know, I handle things as needed. I mean, most, you know, on a very basic level, most of my bills are on auto pay, so I don't worry about paying them.
Nice.
You know, I lost a lot of stress when I handed over all responsibility for bookkeeping to my accountant and his team.
Nice.
So they have access to, you know, my account, and they have access to my shoebox account. And basically, I just make sure the receipts get in there, and I update the spreadsheets with the extraneous expenses like cell phone bills and things like that. So I removed that was the biggest stress for me, handling the accounting. But, you know, handling, you know, being responsible for sort of the part-time pay of my employees or the health care of my family or all those other, you know, responsibilities, they don't really weigh on me because I've been able to handle them. I mean, it's just...
Is it processes? I mean, you know, because I want to go a little deeper because I applaud you and I hear you and I believe you. But I want to know, so the process of setting things on auto pay and you just make sure the money's in the account by that point and outsourcing your bookkeeping makes perfect sense to me because if that's, especially if that's something you're not into, right? Boom, you can take that.
I'm an Amazon seller. I'm not an accountant.
Right. So you move that. Now, it's not even an accountant. It's a bookkeeper. Bookkeeper and accountants are different. And so that minutia work, right? That's not your thing. So you outsource that. And so that helps. So is it because I want to find out, I'm all about intentionality. Is it because you have figured out what you love about this and that's what you do so it doesn't feel like work and you've outsourced those things? That's awesome.
I'm still one of those guys that feels a sense of accomplishment when I seal up a box.
Okay.
You know, a lot of people want to get away from prepping 100%. I still dive in there with my employees. They're all part-time, so some days it's just me here anyway. But I still enjoy sort of putting together a shipment. You know, the satisfaction of getting another box done. Like today we got out like 26 boxes. You know, the standard Home Depot, extra large, et cetera. All around 50 pounds or so. And there's a certain satisfaction in that. And they, you know, that's a nice little serotonin booster, whatever the chemical is. And you know, I can't say for 100%, but I made sure to make a point that I haven't been late on bills for like 10 years. And that may sound like sort of, a small victory, but it's like just knowing that, you know, I stay on top of those. I have reminders to tell me every month to pay X, Y, and Z. I don't have to remember to pay it. I just put it in my calendar. You know, the healthcare, all the stuff is on auto pay. I don't want the stuff that isn't sort of related to my business and what I enjoy to sort of bother me, to sort of be a stressor. So I get away from it. I mean, I realize I'm out of shape and I'm not running marathons like I used to. So that's on the to-do list, but I know when I'm going to start getting back into shape. I know when I'm going to reach that goal where I feel comfortable dedicating a few hours a day to exercise and spending more time with family and things.
Is it a financial goal for you?
It's not really a financial goal. It's more a place I want to be. I mean, the financials are part of it, but it's more like, okay, I want to be able to sort of spend most of the morning, you know, sort of relax, you know, relaxing is not really the right word, but I like to spend the morning going for a run and then, you know, spending some time with my family and then getting to the office around lunchtime or so, you know, and then working until, you know, whenever 7, 8, 9, whatever the sort of, season is, and then doing something else and then being able to take off a week or two while things are still churning here. It sounds like a lot of stress having sort of six people and having an extra space that you rent to sort of run your business out of and worrying about the various insurances and things. But if you set it up properly and you make sure the things are taken care of, like taxes, like accounting, like insurances, all those things, those are the stressors that sort of weigh on you if you put it off just to get one more shipment out and you don't get that done, get that out of the way. I try to get all the things that weigh on me out of the way first.
Processes, processes eliminate stressors. I love it.
Yes.
Exactly. That's so simple. Eliminate stressors.
Yes. Even getting like prepping a shipment of shoes. Like we have a process and that eliminates my worry about them getting something wrong. And I can sort of spot when something goes wrong because it's outside of the norm. Like if something's sent in and I'm repricing, I have a pattern where I reprice every morning. Like I go through my repricer and I look at all the new stuff that's sort of downloaded in, all the new SKUs. And I look through it, and it's usually like 50 to 75 new SKUs, give or take. And then I go through all the existing SKUs and reprice them up or down depending on, you know, where the competition sits. And I can easily see if something's sort of out of whack, like if they sent in something incorrect, like I buy this mouthwash and I saw that we had an inbound shipment of like 12 fresh mint mouthwashes. And I was like, wait a minute, I didn't buy fresh mint. I only brought mint. And, rather than, in the past, when I was there in corporate, I'd be very annoyed that someone got something wrong that I depended on for. And I'd be like, whatever. In this case, all I did was create a, I closed the listing. I waited for it to settle down. I created a removal order. And I just told my employee, you need to watch out for the color because there's two different variations. I don't even like get emotional. My employees are like working in corporate. I'm sure you saw people getting yelled at and like emotions flare.
Oh, yeah.
Well, right. And I saw that all the time, even like grown men, like yelling down at women in corporate America. I can't believe they survived and like they weren't reported to HR. And I've seen it. I don't want to speculate if I were a woman, but I mean, if someone ever sort of, that only happened to me twice ever in corporate. And I always swore if it happened a third time, I go right to HR that same day and complain about it because, I'm not going to tolerate that kind of thing in the workplace. And I don't get emotional with my employees, except sort of on the positive side. Like when I went to the ACE conference, and I'm segueing into ACE because I know you wanted to talk about it a little bit, in January, I left my employees here for the first time to do shipments on their own. And they sent in 7 shipments, and I got 7 shipment problem notices.
Uh-oh.
So your
processes weren't perfect yet.
Yeah, obviously they weren't perfect, and they made mistakes. And I came back and I said, it's great you guys put in 7 shipments, but I got 7 shipment notification problems, and I really don't care whose fault it is. It's not a big deal that there's mistakes. I mean, nothing shut us down, but we just need to not make mistakes. If that means it takes twice as long to do a shipment and you pack a box and you unpack it and count again, that's perfectly fine with me. There's nothing wrong with that, with taking longer to get something done. We just need to get it right, because if I get suspended, you guys simply don't have a job. It's not me letting you go.
How do you handle...
So they take it hard, and they do a tremendously good job now.
Do you have that process documented now?
No, I came from the business analyst world, and I used to document like a madman. I don't see a need for it these days at the moment. I mean, maybe if I get to 20 or 30 employees, and I know Sam's group is big on sort of process documentation and things. I just I teach, and I have my employees teach. I like to give them the responsibility to teach a new person when we bring someone new on board. I feel like it endears them to, be emotionally or psychologically invested when I give them the additional responsibility. I mean, it's almost sort of as valuable as getting a raise in some respects, I think.
Okay, well here, so this is where we're going to disagree a little bit, because this is something I'm working on. I'm giving a talk, not at ACE. This is going to be a talk I give in Resonate. But one of the things I'm talking about is knowing yourself, right, and your who you are, right, what makes you tick, and why for you, when you pack boxes and when you buy, it doesn't seem like work. It sounds like it's something you really enjoy. Yet the minutia of bookkeeping, that's not your thing, right? So when you figure that out, you should just go all in on those couple things that you're really good at, and the rest you outsource, because then you're going to have the best result. Instead of, in the old days, they would teach you to go and whatever you're not good at, go and master. That way you're good at everything. And that's really bad advice, because you don't want to be just good. you want to be great, right? You can never be great at everything. You can be great at some things, right? So whatever you're good at, go and be great at it. And the other stuff, it's not like you can't do it. It's just that you don't choose to do it, right? So that's my big premise. But here, and this is going to be something what I talk about at Resonate, is actually when you want to go from a million to 5 million, when you want to scale past that point, right? As a good example, when you went away, you had problems because your processes weren't in place. And this is not a criticism, so please don't take it. But as you start to get to that next level where you are going to invest more time on your business, not in your business, you're going to have to. And so one of the things that that you really should do, even this is for people who have a one-person company, they need to develop an org chart just so you know what responsibilities are out there. And this seems like silly, but it will come in handy as you scale.
Okay,
so you scale up.
I did that at Ace, actually.
Okay.
I actually created index cards with every process in the business. I didn't actually, you know, sort of outline each process, but I said, you know, manage returns, bookkeeping, receipt maintenance, things like that. I sort of divided it up into things I know I need to get done, and I have it hanging on a wall. It lets me know sort of I got to remember to do these processes.
So my premise is this. You take that org chart and then you develop the departments, actually, just like you would in a corporate environment. Now, you don't have to follow it, but it's really just to outline that you really do need an operations department, right? And clearly, that's one that you're working on, right? So when you do go away, so you have somebody. But you have a finance department. And in your case, you've outsourced your finance department, but it's important. You have an administrative department. You have a marketing department, a sales department, all those different things. And then you start figuring out which one you want to be in. Which one do you love? Which one is your heart in? And it might be administrative. Some people are meant to run companies. There are people that can handle 20, 30 employees. That's their thing. You know, they love, you know, managers and all that kind of jazz. If that's your thing, great. But if it's not, you might be the best sales and marketing person because that's your thing, right? And so that's the department you run. And you go through and document all your processes. But by going through that exercise, you really have outlined and you build it to the scale you want to go to, right? So if you want to be a $5 million operation, you want to look, what does a $5 million operation look like? And then as you're plotting along, you start filling and training for those things. And by going through that, it'll give you some perspective and it'll give you a chance to say no to some things, even though they look attractive because they don't fit into your organization, right? And so by doing all that, you know, in the end, you basically have a plan that you can then scale when an opportunity comes because you've been out there and all of a sudden something comes along and you're like, I'm not ready to handle that. Has that happened to you? Huge buy or just, you're just not ready.
Not huge buy, but like a full-blown warehouse space. I was really considering it. I rent a large one bedroom apartment on the ground floor with a very large garage, which is used as my office and warehouse. But there was an opportunity for me to rent a genuine sort of warehouse space. But it would have been too overwhelming to sort of transition into there.
Right. Because you didn't have the infrastructure in place.
Yeah.
And so by having this, and I'm not, this again, this isn't about you. This is just, the premise is this. By having these standard operating procedures, all these departments figured out, all the responsibilities, you then, if you choose, if that's what you're going for, you then can go and pop it into place and boom, it's ready to rock. And so, you know, the whole key is to figure out what's right for you because it's not right for Steve, what you're going to, you know, and that's cool. So you mentioned ACE and their operation and their training with you. Now, you're an ACE member.
And, yes, I joined this year.
And you are knocking it out of the park with that. You have gotten a great experience. So talk about your experience.
I've had a great experience. I've learned a lot going to how do they call them? The in-house sessions, I guess you call them.
It does help that you're not far from them. You're in New Jersey and you are close to them. And I tell people this all the time. You go in a group like that, and especially that group, you have to be a sponge. You have to be willing to put yourself out there. That is, a shrinking violet doesn't do well in that environment, in my experience.
Network people. You have to be willing to share, you know, what you're doing, what you're working on.
Ask questions. Dominate. Yes. You know, you really do have to. And then you'll get the benefit.
I sometimes feel like I dominate the discussion sometimes at some of the ACE in-house sessions when I'm asking questions or talking about certain things.
But you've benefited.
Oh, I definitely benefit. I mean, and you know, also just me, One of the, I think, largest benefits that isn't really, I don't know if you overlook it, but I think that's somewhat overlooked with these conferences or these mastermind groups, so to speak, is just the just having someone sort of to bounce ideas off and to socialize with that's in your sort of your professional world.
Okay.
Because, you know, the, as you well know, and as many people on your show have mentioned, it, this can be a very lonely business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're, especially when you're living near New York City like I am, and everyone else is sort of commuting to their job and they're out at 5, and they've since a long time ago stopped calling me at like 6 and ask if I want to go to happy hour, but they used to, and they didn't sort of get that I was in the middle of my day. So, you know, being able to sort of, you know, as you're building your business, your, you know, your day is much longer, but, you know, being able to sort of network and sort of just socialize with people who, you can talk about some great find you saw at Nike the other day, and you're like, oh, I found these Nike Air Maxes for like 30% off of $49.99, and like there's only 2 competitors on the list, you know, and you have some kind of thrill in making that find, and you know somebody can relate to it. You know, I talked to that with some friends from college, and they'll look at me like I have 3 heads.
Yeah, the eyes glaze over. So, have you made strong relationships through your meetups at Ace?
Oh yes, definitely. I run into people now at some of the stores that that I shop at regularly, and even people I don't meet at Ace. Like if I see them buying like 12 Nikes and 15 bras and that kind of thing, I go over and talk to them. And like, you know, 9 times out of 10, you know, you end up learning something, or at least the whole experience for the day is more pleasant.
Hmm.
And I've learned a lot, but more so I found ways to enjoy myself a lot more with this business.
Would you say that you've made friends through your experience with either Facebook, Green Room, because you're a Green Room member, Ace, yeah, or any of those?
Oh, I mean, definitely. Definitely. There's people I would, you know, if I were in jail, I could call them for bail.
Jesus.
Not because they have the money, but because, you know, they're, it's the kind of, you know, I need a guy to bail me out kind of friendship.
I didn't know we were going there. Oh, Jesus, please don't go to jail. I was thinking I'm down today. I'm, you know, things aren't going so hot. I couldn't find anything to buy. Or if you're in jail, that's also an option. Wow. Okay, we're going there. Well, please don't call me if you're in jail. I will send bail money, but you know, I'm just not coming to get you out. So you know, thinking about this industry versus the industry you came from, because I think that that's the thing that really is important to look at. Would you ever go back to corporate America? And it's not a criticism of them. They are what they are. And I understand they're a machine and there's a bureaucracy and all that kind of jazz. I left a very good, or I'm leaving a very good company and they've been very good to me, but it's different. The relationships are different.
I think if the right opportunity popped up, I would probably go back, but it would sort of be more on my terms.
On your terms. So you are employable.
I don't know how I put that. I'd say I'm still employable.
Okay.
In some respects, I guess if I actually buckled down and got my CFA, I'd be employable. Because just having 10 years experience at my previous firm, should be enough of a sort of certificate of achievement, along with throw in a CFA there, and like I could work at any bank. But it would be sort of more on my terms. You know, I think back to when I worked in corporate and the people I worked around. I used to remember seeing all these people ducking out at like 5:05 and making a show of getting in at like 8:30. And, you know, and just thinking about how hard I worked, like, you know, how much effort I put in. And while I really enjoyed a lot of the work I did and sort of the minutiae of some of the work and some of the data analysis, I realized I didn't work maybe even a quarter as hard as I do on this business.
That's true.
And it's not to say I was lazy and I was working corporate America. I just didn't understand what hard work was. I mean, you go to work and you spend, you know, the first 2 hours of the day in a meeting, and then you spend about an hour reviewing your emails when you get back from that meeting, and then you spend maybe an hour working, and then you go to lunch, and then you have meetings in the afternoon. I mean, you know how that is.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they can eat away the whole day, and suddenly you're like, I didn't get any work done today. And it's kind of it was a running joke when I used to work in IT at my previous firm, that if you got some work done, somebody must have canceled the meeting.
That's funny. That's funny. Yeah. It's true. So, but what do you say to the guy that's working at Sears? Now, you just spent you gave me a 5-minute rant about Sears and the way they're operating, right? Maybe a 10-minute.
Yeah.
And so, what do you say to that guy who's working just as hard as you were at Sears, who, you know, in that environment, he's doing his best. He feels like he's, you know, killing himself and this and that. How does he make it through that?
Well, he should already. I mean, if he's still working at Sears, he's got to have some kind of exit strategy already planned.
Okay.
I mean, everyone at Sears, in corporate Sears, has an exit strategy, I'm sure. And if they don't, they're just going to retire when the firm goes under.
Okay.
I mean, the average life of an executive there is under 3 years these days.
Okay.
It's probably under less than that even.
All right. I just was wondering where you were going with that. I wonder, you know, how many people would go back just because of their security. How about the not, well, you said you're already, you felt like you didn't handle, you know, or you were handling the stress really well. The lack of security in this business, does
that? That's what stressed me out initially, lack of stress. And I still haven't sort of gotten a handle on my retirement finances, but I'm not terribly worried about that at the moment. But, you know, the lack of security with sort of healthcare and benefits, especially, you know, when I was going full time with this, you know, I still had my healthcare for my firm through the end of the year. But after that, I was like, kind of, you know, it was all new to me trying to figure out how to sign up for healthcare, you know, as an individual or, you know, as a family without a corporation, you know, sort of behind me, paying 80% or whatever they normally pay. That was, you know, initially handling all this stuff, life insurance and all that stuff was kind of a stressor. I mean, this is the first year since I started doing this full time. I reached out and got life insurance too.
That's a critical one. I just said that to somebody when they were talking about risk management. I'm like, you owe your family to carry life insurance. So should you pass away, that business goes away. Guess what? Somebody better deal with it, right? I think that's a smart move. How did you find your insurance through the Obamacare?
My first year I did Obamacare. And the site works beautifully and, you know, the service is great, but I didn't want to sort of rely on, I knew that after the first year, I didn't need a subsidy. So I didn't see any point going through Obamacare. So I actually went through an insurance broker.
Okay.
And he got me, he not only got me my, my health insurance, but he also referred me for the business insurance I needed and for various other things that I needed. You know, now I have a guy who can help me get insurance, you know, it's all kind of networking thing.
That's awesome.
It was a learning experience for sure. I mean, all of this is, you know, you go to a corporation, they hand you a packet with all your benefits and everything.
Yep. And you take it for granted. And you do take it for granted. I mean, there is a huge cost with all that stuff. And so now you're doing it yourself. And I think, you know, let's face it, you and I both know more self-employed individuals than ever, at least in my world. I mean, I think about I used to know a few people that had their own thing. Now I know almost my whole world is that, right? Outside of my job. I mean,
my Facebook is people who are self-employed
right.
nowadays.
And so
all the employed people don't filter into my news anymore.
Well, you get Ashlyn Haddon and her whole business, not her whole business, but her huge growth in her business has come because she's able to underwrite Amazon Business Insurance, right? And now she's underwriting suspension insurance, right? And so that my point is that there are more companies going to be catering to these self-employed individuals as they find out that this is a pretty lucrative place to come in and do a seminar about life insurance and do it and why it's important, you know, keyman insurance or whatever, you know, why all those things are important. I think that's a great opportunity for your financial planning. There you go, Robert, you know, because I guess I saw somebody out there talking about it today because it's tax time and people are getting their, you know, their taxes and they're trying to get those last minute deductions in and they're realizing, wait, you mean I can do an SEP and I can do some different things or Roth IRA. I saw somebody else posting and it's like, yes, you can do all these things.
If you go to ACE, we heard some wacky ideas for tax purposes, like setting up a corporation whose shares are held by a 401k plan and then feeding all your profits into the 401k plan. It was some wacky idea someone brought up and it was very interesting.
I'm not a tax expert. I'm an accountant and I don't do my own taxes. How's that for, I just don't follow it. So.
Wow.
Okay.
I don't either. And to be perfectly honest, I'm late every year. I tell my accountant to estimate what my taxes are and I pay like an extra 5-10 grand. I overpay and then I, you know, take my time through September to get all the deductions in the order.
So that's
chronic.
Okay. Well, there sounds like another process. You know, I'm gonna keep up with you on these processes because let me leave you with this thought. Without help and documentation, you are the bottleneck. You are the limit. So just so you know, and this isn't a criticism of you because it's Steve talking to himself. I'm looking at myself in the reflection here. Without that documentation, which I don't have a lot of it because I really don't have any staff this year. However, I am. I did hire a personal assistant, and I'm going to hire some people. But I'm the bottleneck. And so by putting that down and making it easy so they don't have to come through me to figure that out, I am going to improve the processes. And so think about that. I want you to think about that. Again, it's not a criticism because I'm talking to myself too. So, okay. So what's next for Robert? So what's the big plan? So you're going to double your business. There's no doubt in my mind. You've already got that structure in place. You're on pace to do that. You're investing in yourself by being a member of ACE, which isn't cheap, but you're a squeaky wheel. You're getting the value from it that you believe. What's next?
I foresee just kind of growing this. I'm growing the wholesale portion of my business a lot more. I just put in probably the largest wholesale order I've done ever.
Love it.
With one of my my beauty and cosmetics wholesale contact. And I've got some more wholesale deals coming up. One of the benefits of being an ACE is their wholesale program. Mm-hmm. And I was just talking with someone else at ACE about it, and like, there's some great deals to be had in the program. And I keep telling myself, I got to remember to order from this and this and this. The thing is, with that one, I was jokingly saying it felt like homework. Because it's like, you got to remember, like, there's 150 different wholesale accounts you can order from. And it's like, I got to remember to research this one and this one and this one. And at the moment, it's kind of more fun for me to jump over to Nike in the local mall and buy 150 pairs of shoes.
Because you enjoy that. And see, there again.
Yeah, I enjoy that. So it kind of gravitate towards it.
Yeah, no, I get it. I understand.
There's a little bit of satisfaction in getting a decent wholesale order out at with some contact through ACE as well. It's just, it's 24 hours in a day and I have to sleep at least four of them. There's family and friends occasionally that I need to dedicate some time to. I need to sort of, I don't want to say buckle down, but I need to sort of dedicate some time to sort of doing things that I know are going to push me forward.
Intentionally.
I think about if I have 40 wholesale accounts set up and I'm ordering $5,000 worth of product from each one, that's all my purchasing for the month, and I can just sit back and just wait for them to be delivered. But I'm not there yet. But moving towards there. I don't think I'll ever stop RA, though. RA is it sort of reminds me what's out there, and there's a bit of fun to it in finding things.
I think you got to find a mix that works for you, because I think you're having met you face to face a couple of times. I know that that's your personality. You love that. That's your thing. And so I think you got to watch that this doesn't become too much of a job. You want to figure that out. And so finding that, where you still can go out and get that thrill, as you said, the serotonin, get things moving because you knew that you found it and you made the deal. I mean, that's exciting. And so I think I'm with you. I don't think you should give it up. I think you got to keep that in your mix because you're good at it. And there's nothing wrong with that. Don't apologize for it. That's an awesome thing.
Yeah, I know people who love going to Goodwills and thrift stores, and they do tremendously well at it. And
that's their thing.
That's their thing. And I don't begrudge them sort of enjoying doing it, even though, there's always more lucrative things like, real estate or whatever. But, at this point, this all leads back to sort of why I say I don't feel much stress about my business.
Love it.
I'm sure my parents feel a little stressed about my business until I showed them my December numbers last year. But that was a little bit of a shocker when I showed it to them. It was kind of funny.
Well, but what? As a dad, I'd be proud because I'd be like, oh, he's learned how to fish. And quite frankly, that's my mindset is I don't have to worry because he could provide. And that's a big moment when a dad recognizes that his son or daughter got there. And I know it sounds corny, but I'm just telling you, if you don't have kids or your kids are little, you'll see it someday and you'll be like, and then you'll watch the way he treats his significant other and you'll judge him on. I mean, these are big moments in my life when I see my sons. I'm big on opening the door for my wife. 31 years we've been married. And so seeing that, just seeing the way they treat, those things are big moments for your parents. Don't downplay it. It's a big deal in their lives. And that's a pretty cool thing as a dad.
Yeah. My mom comes over and helps me all the time.
That's awesome.
I teach her.
Think about that. That's cool. Your relationship is different because of that.
Oh, my relationship has improved tremendously with my family.
But just think about that. That's a that's a different relationship than just seeing them at Easter or at Christmas. You know what I mean?
You're a lucky man. When I used to work in corporate for about 8 years. I lived maybe 4 blocks away from my parents or 5 blocks. I probably saw them once a week or once every 2 weeks. Now that I run this business, I see them 3, 4, 5 times a week. One of my sisters or my mom, they're always calling me up asking if I need any help this evening or something like that.
That's awesome.
It's great. And we have dinner more often together. It's another big bonus with running this kind of business.
Love it, love it, love it. Dude, you just closed it up perfectly for me, because you have built an intentional life, and look at what the richness you're getting other than money. Love it. Okay, so
well,
somebody
money too.
That's not a bad thing. So if somebody has a follow-up question, best way to get in touch with you?
I'm all over Facebook. I mean, okay. Just look up my name. I always stop and probably to my detriment sometimes and help and converse with people and help them with their business. I mean, just this afternoon, I think I took a 3-hour lunch helping someone from Ace, having a conversation on the phone. So just look me up on Facebook. I don't think I'm not blocked. Just send me a message. It's always
I'll put a link there for you. And, you know, let me just tell you this. You give without expectation, you'll get tenfold.
I do all the time. Yep.
Right. You'll get tenfold. And so that's probably part of the reason you're having incredible success. Man, Robert, I wish you nothing but success. I guess I'll be seeing you in a few weeks. Can't wait. Just an awesome guy, awesome story. And, man, I just wish you continued success. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Another great interview with another solid seller. I mean, the guy's doubling his sales intentionally. He's focused on what he wants to do for now, knowing that he might change. And I think you just need to take a good inward look at yourself and figure out what you want to do. ecommercemomentum.com, ecommercemomentum.com. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.